Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Mormon Channel Daily. Today, I'm Charlotte Kniep. And if you're currently in a relationship, then you might be all too familiar with an emotion that can often accompany this time of your life, and that's anxiety. Having experienced this myself when I was engaged to my husband, I can tell you that it is definitely not a fun experience to have these powerful feelings of worry and doubt and fear all the time. They invade your mind and they affect your behavior and your emotions, and it's definitely not a fun experience. But Elisa Goodwin Snell is a friend of our show, and she's been a marriage counselor for several years and is now a dating and relationship coach. And she's here with us in the studio today to talk about where relationship anxiety stems from and how to combat it so that it won't take over our lives. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So a lot of people think that if they feel anxious in a relationship, then it must mean that it's not right.
Yeah.
Why might that be a flawed way of thinking, and how can you combat those thoughts when they do arise in you?
Well, I think it comes from the idea that every thought we have must be important. That if I have a thought, I have a feeling, it must be valid, it must be important. And I think we have to realize that all thoughts and feelings are not necessarily valid or important, and that the spirit speaks to the mind and to the heart. And so a lot of times a thought or feeling that can come from a deep place of fear, or just because sometimes when we have high levels of anxiety, we get distressing, unwanted thoughts without any warning. We can have a thought just pop into our head. And that's part of the natural process of the brain, that the brain can run in cycles, especially for people who have like obsessive compulsive disorder, where it just will throw in this unwanted thought. If we give it validity and credit every single time we have a thought like that, we're going to go crazy all over the place with where our thoughts are going and our emotions are going. I believe that emotions bend to our choices. So when we choose secure behaviors, when we choose secure beliefs, when we choose grounded thoughts, our emotions start to become tethered or anchored to those behaviors. Instead of floating all over the place and taking us on a wild ride, now those emotions start to become more central and anchored on our behaviors. What we have to do in this process, we have to decide, first off, is this a rational belief? Is this a belief that is going in the direction of what I want? So a lot of times I'll see clients who they'll come into a session and their thoughts are jumping all over the place. First thing I'll ask them is, well, where is it you want to go? What is it you want to accomplish? What is the outcome you want? Focus on the outcome. Focus your behaviors, your thoughts, and your beliefs. Choose what you want to feed, and then you'll start to see that you become more productive and effective. So a lot of times, if you have high levels of anxiety, part of this struggle that you might have with these thoughts that are taking you all over the place and capturing your attention and your brain is locking in on a random thought can very much be a result from the neurochemistry that's happening in your brain. If you have a depleted amount of serotonin or norepinephrine, you're going to need some chemical assistance, and they'll help to take that anxiety down a notch or two where you can process and choose the thoughts you want to focus on instead of feeling like your thoughts are grabbing your attention and holding on to you. And so the higher you are on that scale, the more you have a hard time resisting your thoughts, the more it may be an indication that you need to consider not just counseling, but maybe medication. So when we have anxiety, we need to be considering it on a scale of 1 to 10. What's the level of suffering? What's the level of impairment? How much is it really stealing my attention versus I'm able to control my attention? For other people who have anxiety, when we're looking at choosing a thought and saying, okay, I want to go in this direction, if you act the part, fake it till you make it. So I'll have clients who will come in, they're having all this anxiety about a relationship, and they're thinking and they're analyzing, and I'll say to them, okay, if you had a secure thought process, if you felt secure about yourself, if you felt secure about this relationship or this person, or you felt secure about the general goodness of the opposite sex, that people will invest in you, they'll be fair with you, they care about you, they'll hear your feelings and needs, they'll engage with you. If you felt secure about the opposite sex, if you felt secure in your future and secure about God's investment in you, how would you act different? If you felt that way, if you believe that way, how would you act different? And they would oftentimes say, well, I would just talk to the person about what I'm struggling with. Instead of them analyzing and worrying, they would talk with them.
Simple. Yeah.
And then by talking with them, and they would go into the conversation with a sense of confidence that the conversation would go well and that the other person would respond well. And at that point, then we start talking about, well, how can you communicate in a way that will increase the other person's sense that you have faith and trust in them? How can you communicate that? How will you act different if you felt sick? here? How would you hold your body language and your posture? How would your heart rate be? And how could you slow your heart rate? They may not feel all those things, but if we practice the behaviors, they can start learning how to self-soothe and calm themselves and change the script in their mind about what the other person might do or say. And they all of a sudden start to see more hopeful outcomes. And then when they go there, they're able to react in a different way as well. How to guide the conversation with a goal in mind instead of being distracted by all your criticisms, and you throw in all your criticisms all at once, which is really ineffective.
And I love this thought that thoughts and feelings can follow a behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time we think it's the opposite way, that we have to think positive and then we'll act positive. Like you said, we kind of have to trick our bodies, trick our minds. In effect, when we act more confident, we'll feel more confident. And I think that's something you can apply maybe not only to a romantic relationship, but to a professional relationship, to a familial relationship that might be struggling.
Yeah. And it's a faith-based principle. It's believing in something that is greater or higher than the fear that you're experiencing right now, and choosing to have faith in that and choosing to act on that, believing that somehow, I like to believe that when I make a good faith effort, that God matches my effort, that he's able to do things for me I can't do for myself. If I know a principle seems true or solid or right, taking action on that principle, the feeling will follow. They don't understand the basic way that the Lord works with us. And he teaches us a correct principle and he asks us to obey. And then the feeling follows. How often do we go to church because we really wanted to go to church in the morning? We really wanted to get up at 8 a.m. so we could make it to church at 9 a.m. I mean, you know, or that we really are looking forward to 3 hours, or how often do we go do our visiting teaching or home teaching because we're so excited to do it. But when we do the behavior, the emotions start to come.
The affirmation.
And that's a simple example of making a choice to choose a thought or choose a behavior, and to see that our emotions really do follow that. And I believe that that's a correct interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, that's my view. But I believe that there's truth in that, that when we choose to go on the right path, or we choose to follow truth, a true principle of any type, that the emotions start to follow. When we believe that every emotion and thought we have is valid and important, I believe that we're much more susceptible to the natural man when that happens. And that, you know, we have a lot more control and we have a lot more power if we are more intentional.
So how can that apply? I know you've talked before about another huge stumbling block to intimacy in relationships is avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
So how can this behavior before the emotions tactic apply to helping someone who's avoidant and passive become more actively engaged?
It's exactly the same principle, because what they do is they're waiting for a strong, powerful emotion before they engage.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times people have an avoidant attachment. They're looking for someone who they want to be with instead of making a choice to just pursue and engage
and create a good relationship.
They're waiting for that powerful emotion. And the funny thing is that our society perpetuates this idea of romantic love. And what our society is actually creating is an attachment to an anxious attachment type of love, not a secure attachment. Romantic love is truly more of an anxious type of love. It's an obsessional type of love. And so people who have avoidant attachment oftentimes see an anxious response of this desperate need for a relationship as a true sign of love. And they don't really understand what a secure attachment really looks like. And they're looking for this emotional dependency that they're going to feel on this person. Well, the only time that people who have avoidant attachment tend to feel that way is when they're with someone else who's more avoidant than they are. They feel this desperate need for a relationship, or the person is super toxic, you know, and they're really unhealthy. And so they're willing to sacrifice everything to be with this person. And,
you know, can't live like that.
You can't live like that. It's a dramatic high and low, back and forth, in and out, up and down relationship. Speaking back to what you were saying of how does this relate to somebody who has an avoidant attachment? The reality is their passiveness that is keeping them passionless in their relationships. If they will be more vulnerable, if they will talk, they'll communicate, they'll take risks, they'll sacrifice, they'll engage in the other person's happiness. Instead of focusing on their anxiety and disengaging, they'll think about how to serve and sacrifice for the person, or how to open up, or if they start talking about core fears and they start really getting to know the person in a deeper way and deepening the relationship more, they'll all of a sudden discover the feelings start to follow. But they have to make a choice, and they have to make a choice to feed the right kinds of behaviors and to recognize the behaviors that are problematic and that are hurting them, and to resist those behaviors and to move forward. And to commit for the stage you're in. They're not going to move into the next stage unless they accomplished a secure attachment, unless they started having the feelings that they think they need. And that way, they don't try to bite off more than they can chew, which always will make them become more avoidant.
Yeah, it's so important not to jump straight from the casually dating, getting to know each other, to, okay, I'm committed fully forever and ever. It's you and me.
And then they'll just jump right back out, especially once they see any kind of weakness in the other person that frightens them. They'll see that situational trigger and they'll withdraw and run.
And I think that's what we see. I mean, I've noticed something in myself. I think that's what we see in Hollywood, this obsessive romantic love played out. And when we see that so much, that's kind of what we think is the ideal, and that's what we think we're aspiring for.
And it's not how you sustain it. A lot of my clients, they're looking for that infatuated love, and in stage one, that's fine. But if they're actually in a good relationship, when they get into the deeper stages of the relationship, they're going to find that the doldrums of the relationship start to happen. The person who seemed so ideal in stage one is very human and flawed in stage two and stage three. And now the real work comes, where they have to make a choice. They have to make a choice to do specific behaviors instead of being driven by emotion. They have to make a choice. And that's the time when a lot of clients are really tempted to jump out of a relationship and go back to the beginning, because it feels like if I have to work at it, it must not be right. If it's not natural and organic, it must not be right. If we have to actually, you know, meet with a dating coach or relationship coach or a counselor, that must mean something's foundationally flawed. And it's not true. It just means that now we're in the real work of dealing with the fact that life is messy and people are messy, and there is no best out there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
For sharing those thoughts. That I hope you got a lot out of listening to this episode today. I just wanted to end with a quote that really helped me. I've mentioned before, I find a lot of connection with this topic of anxiety in relationships, and anxiety and fear are very closely connected, especially for me. But this quote from former LDS apostle Elder Richard G. Scott really comforted me in my time of trying to figure out what was right in my life. And he said, "The inspiring influence of the Holy Spirit can be overcome or masked by strong emotions such as anger, hate, passion, fear, or pride. And when such influences are present, it is like trying to savor the delicate flavor of a grape while eating a jalapeno pepper. Both flavors are present, but one completely overpowers the other. In like manner, strong emotions overcome the delicate promptings of the Holy Spirit." Thank you so much for tuning in today. Mormon Channel Daily is brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.